This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, I'm Josh Smith and welcome to Rain. This podcast is all about empowerment and open conversations with incredible guests. So let's get straight into it. It's getting hot in here, as today we're joined by Charlie Murphy, the star of Netflix's Obsession. Obsession is an erotic thriller which follows Charlie's character Anna, who embarks on a racy affair with her fiancé's dad, William, who is played by Richard Armitage, who also makes a bonus cameo appearance in this episode. If you haven't seen it yet, there are plot spoilers incoming. But I also want to warn you in advance to not watch this show with your parents. Charlie is no stranger to gripping drama, though. You'll remember her as Anne Gallagher in Happy Valley and as Jessie Eden in Peaky Blinders, too. We talk about the amount of injuries Charlie picked up whilst filming Obsession and how liberating it was to film sex scenes where a female character was leading the action for once. And we love a show which makes talking about sex less taboo, too, don't we? How are you?
Oh, thanks for having me.
This show, wow. We go on an emotional roller coaster with your character. If you were going to pitch it, how would you pitch it to an audience?
Oh, God. I mean, we have some buzzwords, don't we? an erotic relationship thriller. Noir, I would say it has a hint of. Reminds me a bit of Hitchcock as well. It's, I don't know, it's quite an alluring miniseries, I think, hopefully.
Yeah. I think that does what it says on the tin. It definitely does that. And you've really nailed the seductive qualities. Like, that whole, like, staring across the room.
Trying not to blink.
Being like, that's you. Like, as someone, I'm terrible at being seductive. What learnings can you share?
I'm slapstick. That's kind of my sweet disposition, I think. I don't think I'm really an alluring, kind of naturally alluring, I don't know, person. But I know it's pretty easy when you have a scene partner like Richard Armitage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You decide.
It's kind of done for you.
And away from the hilarity of that situation and having to get into that seductive zone, it is a very serious show and it covers so many serious topics and things we need to be talking about as a society. Did you have any reservations about taking this on?
No, and for the reasons that you laid out, I think. Just a brilliantly complicated person who has so many contradictions, but we all do. And then dealing, you know, born out of a childhood trauma as well and how she is the way she is and this like incredible compartmentalizer and also leading this like double life. And that's just so fun to kind of stretch yourself in every direction to try and kind of bring some plausibility to that character. And hopefully, I don't know, hopefully understanding, if not relatable, maybe people won't be able to relate to it. Who knows? But that they can understand why she does what she does was kind of my goal, really.
And it is a kind of about how obsession then enables you to let go of inhibitions in a way, right? Like it's all about letting go of inhibitions. Has it enabled you to let go of things in playing a role that's this complex like that?
Yes, yeah, because there are bigger things than you at play. We had a great process though, to kind of feel like I was free playing. To actually feel like you're playing on screen is just so much fun, and something that I don't take lightly, because, you know, it can so often not be the case where you feel that you are free to play. Mm. But we had a great process. Lisa Barisasar and Glenn Leyburn were our directors, and Lisa really led on that emotional arc for them, and you know, throughout the affair, and also what happens in their lives outside of this affair. They both have these relationships that are good relationships that, you know, I'm sure people will be shouting at the TV going, why are you ruining, you know, why are you ruining these things that could really blossom into something beautiful and have real healthy longevity? So that was great that we really worked on those two, essentially that both of them have these two relationships and worked on both of them and keeping them grounded. But also then we had this incredible intimacy coordinator called Adelaide Waldrop. And she was just another level to anything that I've worked with before. We really worked through that, the psychological tone and then the physical tone of each sex scene, of each motivation. It was all there in the play. And once we had done that, then we just completely felt free to, you know, we knew the dance. We learned our choreography. We knew how to punch safely. You know, all those things that you do with choreographers, with stunt coordinators. I finally felt like I was in a place to do that kind of stuff. Mm. Felt fully armed, really.
Because I think we talk a lot about intimacy coordinators now, which is amazing that we have these on set. And I think so many people still don't necessarily understand what they actually do. What does an intimacy coordinator actually help with and enable your performance?
Yes, so from a very basic point of view, they set up the atmosphere of consent and boundaries, and we do a touch map all over your body and we would work through, okay, I'm happy being touched there, I'm happy being touch there but not there, and it can be the side of your arm, it can be anything. You know, we don't know, we're all just humans coming to set. We don't know what someone's been through or you know what makes them uncomfortable, and we work out all of that, and then we find a map then that we are safe to use, and then we work through the physicality of each scene and we choreograph the actual sex itself. And then there's another level of how you want it to feel, what's happening. It's all about the context. So what's happening, and each, we were, you know, we had ours labeled, we had different types of sex scenes labeled and where they are in the storyline and how, I don't know, how aggressive it can be, how gentle it's setting the tone. So she's very much leading that, really.
And I think as well, like, doing sex scenes on screen must be quite a daunting prospect. Then when you have the intimacy coordinator on board, it makes it a lot easier with the choreography, like you're saying. But that's still the element of having to be nude on screen must be quite a vulnerable state to have to be in. And that's what I was thinking when I was watching this. I was like, wow, that's quite a vulnerable place to go to, but a very empowering one at the same time, maybe. Is it maybe empowered your relationship with your own body in a new way, do you think?
I think so, yeah. I think so. I did feel, that's a great word actually, because I did feel very empowered, because we had done the homework and I felt like, oh, I'm doing something as it's supposed to have been done. I've done a lot of sex scenes, nothing that I've ever been upset over, but sometimes at the end of the day, felt a tinge of regret or a tinge of, oh God, that's in the can and that's out of my control now. I felt in control, and that's empowering.
Yeah.
And fun then. We had a lot of fun on set. We had a lot of fun because we felt protected.
And it's so empowering to see sex scenes like this on screen where the woman is dictating it as well, because there's still not enough of that on our screens. Was that an empowering element of it for you as well?
That was so much fun. And to explore that world of, so Anna is the dominant submissive. She's very much in control. But what is what feeds her and what is cathartic for her is to hand the reins, knowing that everything is set up, it's all consensual, and she can just be taken somewhere. Mm. And that was just really fun. That was really, really fun to do.
Yeah.
And I think it's so tastefully done as well. And I think it's, as a society, we really shy away from having discussions about submissive versus unsubmissive relationships and this kind of sex on screen. And it's kind of amazing that a show like this is there to kind of like take away the shame from it in a way as well.
Yeah, I think so. Richard was saying, and he did say it early on in our rehearsal and filming, he's like, let's just do as the French do and just kind of, you know, not be so, I don't know, so, I don't know, scared or, you know, embarrassed by our bodies. Like, we all have our bits, don't we? That's not verbatim, I'm just adding.
I mean, we've all got our bits, but
we've all got our bits.
Yeah. And on these, but that is so empowering because I feel like we're such a weird society, I think, especially in Britain and in Ireland, where we're very much like, oh my God, we can't
covers
talk about
here,
these things.
Turn covers your light up to off. Here,
like, don't talk about things. Like, and it's good that we have shows like this that are changing the narrative and pushing people to see sex on screen in new ways.
Yeah, and to explore what they like.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Which is so great. And I think also a real amazing element of it is that the female gaze, or actually in this, maybe sometimes the gay gaze, in my case, is actually more, it gets more of a focus than necessarily the male gaze does, because the male gaze has so traditionally been something we've seen media through. Mm-hmm. Was that something quite interesting to play with?
Yes. And that's exactly, I think Morgan Lloyd Malcolm wrote the adaptation to this, and she's just done an incredible job of making it finally even, which is just brilliant, you know. I've often played parts where I feel like I disappear at the end of the page, you know, and then you turn the page and then I'm back again. So there's no filler around it. And this, it felt almost too full. It felt like, oh God, I've got so many things to pull from. And there's so much stuff that has happened to her that it was just felt so rich and like a freedom to go, okay, I'll pick this and I'll pick this because it's all there.
Yeah. And I think this is what this character really stands for, that we now have such amazing, well-rounded, four-dimensional, complex female characters on our screens. And we've worked really hard to get to this point. Mm-hmm. But there are still so many like sexist stereotypes that still persist around female characters. What still frustrates you about the conversations?
What do they say? What's the trinity, the virgin, the whore, and the mother?
Yeah.
That's it. Like trying to flesh all of that out and go, okay, where are we? I think I'm excited to be an actor right now, an actress, actor right now.
And I think that's so great because so much has changed in the last 5 years with Me Too and Time's Up and changing the way we perceive and represent women on screen. And I wondered when I was watching this, if this kind of character came to you maybe like 5 years ago, 10 years ago, would you have been more nervous about taking it on?
In that climate, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. It just wouldn't have been the same show. Because we felt very relaxed. It would have been shocking to have that kind of script executed the way that we did it with Adelaide, with Lisa and Glenn, who, you know, wants to explore as, you know, why that they just don't appear when you open the door and, you know, there is this whole world around them. So, yeah, I think it would have been a different show.
And I think what you so powerfully bring to the screen in this is her trauma and is her backstory. And in roles that you played before, especially in Happy Valley, the way you bring trauma to the screen is so impactful that you feel it in your chest when you watch you on screen. How do you prepare to deal with that kind of subject matter and push it onto the screen and look after yourself at the same time?
I don't know. I think there's a darkness to the Irish psyche. We love a good funeral.
Yeah.
You know, we're always keening. There's always, you know, you're pulling up RIP.ie and seeing who's died. I don't know. I feel maybe it's from an ancestral kind of darkness. I don't know. But I'm luckily I've worked with some great people and been on some very happy sets. And for Happy Valley, that was very dark subject matter, but it was a very happy set. Mm. And to have worked with a lot of first ADs that are, you know, they're the timekeepers on set. They're the people that are talking to you last minute in a situation before you roll and the second you finish. And yeah, just some really special crew members that kind of get it and able to look after you. And then you can kind of leave it at the door. Sometimes it seeps into your life a little bit, but only for the duration of the job, really, for me.
How do you make sure it doesn't seep in to the rest of your life? Because I guess it's quite difficult to carry that around with you if you're filming something for like 6 months at a time.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little bit like Anna. I can definitely compartmentalize. And then just having good family and friends around you to keep you grounded and to tell you to cop on and get over yourself and all that.
Keep you grounded.
Yeah, not take yourself too seriously.
Yeah, and having great castmates as well, because you have such an amazing cast on this show. Right. I mean, Richard is amazing. What did you learn about yourself through working with this cast?
Oh, that's a great question. That humour is important. Kindness is important. Like, just a really gorgeous, caring cast. Our first week was a night shoot in the Hadley House. So we had nights there and you get to know each other. Definitely in night shoots, you're all hanging around with your coffees at 3 a.m. chatting, and it was a great start to the job. Indra Varma is one of the funniest people for on-set chat, so that was good.
Yeah, good chat always gets you through, doesn't
good
it?
Good chat, yeah, good chat. Kindness, connecting, keeping that going and feeling a sense of team.
Yeah.
I felt like we were all a little team.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
And another thing that occurred to me when I was watching it, which I thought was so great that you bring to the screen with this role, is this idea of what a likable female is. Because I think in our society, we've got such a pressure on, if you're a woman, you need to be this kind of way to be likable and to be digestible by society. Whereas this character, Anna, she's like, she's good, she's bad, she's in between.
Yeah.
I love her because I just wanted to reach through the screen and just give her a massive hug and be like, babe, just go see a therapist, please.
That's so good. Yeah, I felt the same when I read it. I just wanted to grab her and protect her and, you know, and have to stop for a second and just kind of, look after her, look after herself. She's a great person. I'm glad you said what likable is, because she's a conundrum. There's so much happening for her, but hopefully you see a vulnerability there that she really honestly isn't this femme fatale character, you know, that she's doing something bad. Like, you know, she's this mean, evil, you know, it's so boring. It's just so boring. Like, she honestly believes that morally she's okay. If she's not hurting anyone, if they don't know, it's fine. She's just on this kind of deluded path, you know. And she thinks that that it's sustainable and she can achieve, like, you know, bliss in both worlds. And she really does love Jay. And she says in one of the episodes, he's my normality. He's what tethers me, because she knows that she can just fly off, you know, into this kind of drug-induced almost world. She needs to be tethered, and that's him. And if there was any more dialogue to put in, she would probably say, and you have to stay in your marriage as that's your normality.
Yeah. How was it interesting to play into unlikability, though?
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to play it all. It's fun to play it all. And that is a fun challenge to have, to go, wow, if you bullet point everything that happens, there you go, you have to do that now. And just, you know, you don't want the audience to give up on her on day one, so make that happen. Mm. Make them try and go on a journey with you. That's the challenge, and that's what you get a kick out of, really, for me anyway.
Well, I mean, you always take us on a journey on screen, and you literally have done it all, like we were saying in the top, like from Peaky Blinders to Happy Valley, and your career is amazing. And I think that we are so used to, in our society as well, seeing all the success and not seeing what goes on behind the scenes to get those yeses and convert those no's into yeses. What do you think you've learned about success and failure on that journey for you?
Oh, God. Well, I've definitely learned a lot more from failure. Mm. And you get to really know yourself when you're unemployed and when you're getting all of those no's in a row for tapes, for meetings. It's really hard. I would love to say to actors that, you know, your success should not be wrapped up in your self-worth. And I'm still trying to say that to myself. So it's very much a work in progress. It's really hard to, and I suppose not just actors, everyone really, isn't it? It's so hard to go, just because I didn't get that thing doesn't mean, you know, it seeps into your self-worth, or trying not to keep, you know, trying to keep that separate. That doesn't have to be your whole world. But yeah, you learn a lot about yourself when you're watching Cash in the Attic day on end.
What do you learn about
yourself?
Hanging
out in your PJs. Just going, I need to break into mum and dad's house and see what's up in that attic. I'm an out-of-work actor. I need to flog some stuff here.
What do you think you learn about yourself through watching Cash in the Attic? This is quite a good philosophical question,
this
actually.
Is good. What else? What other daytime TV have I really binged?
I feel like for me, it's Loose Women. It like angers me. It gets me fired up.
Yeah.
Gets me for the day, that midpoint. You're like, great, cool. We can keep going.
That was a cathartic exorcism and I can get on to learning my lines with this tape.
In those moments, though, have you ever questioned your path and been like, oh, is this something I really want to keep putting myself through?
I don't think I could do anything else. Mm. So I'm kind of like stuck with my own want for it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm kind of held captive by myself, really, to keep going. There's been some great moments in my life where you're standing at the side of the stage, or you are about to do a sex scene, and there's that moment before you do the thing, you're like, what is this? Why have I done this? 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, there are moments of existentialist crisis or just very deep questions as to why. And it always kind of comes back to the feeling of trying to be someone else and do it convincingly and try to, you know, to get into the head of someone that I don't know, that I don't know and I haven't experienced. And then trying to bring a little bit of myself to that, because that's what happens. You are yourself, so you have to bring something.
Yeah.
That's just so addictive to me.
When do you think you've been proudest of yourself on that journey?
Like a particular job or a particular moment?
Or just a particular job or moment where you've been like, wow, I'm proud of myself for getting to this point.
I think it was a job in Ireland. Love Hate was kind of my first TV job that was reoccurring, and it kind of grew over time. That getting the second series of that, because I was supposed to be on it for 3 days in the first series, and then they wrote more for me, and, you know, I just didn't exist before really, and then they wrote something for me. That was such a proud moment, and a moment that I felt proud, but also a moment where I was like, oh God, I really want to show them, thank you for this opportunity. I'm really going to show you. I'm going to give it my all. That's a real moment that sticks with me. And then another moment of just absolute lunacy and pure joy of being just proud of what I've achieved was doing Disco Pigs. It's one of my first things coming to the UK, doing that show with an incredible actor called Rory Fleckburn and this just gorgeous director, Cathal Cleary, and that play is by Enda Walsh. And he blew my mind when I was in youth theatre. I remember reading that play and that made me want to be an actor. So, so getting to do that play, that was like a moment in time that still actually almost makes me blush with just how happy I was.
Makes all those Cash in the Attic episodes wild, doesn't it?
Listen, it's theatre hours. I can still watch Cash in the Attic.
They're the kind of roles you want to get.
Yeah, come on. You can live both worlds just like Anna.
No, I really want to see Anna come back. I know this is like a controversial opinion, maybe, because obviously it's a limited series. There's four episodes. But like
Limited.
But I feel like if she was going to make a comeback, what would you want to see her do? How many more Wrecking Ball moments can one woman have?
Oh, my God. Yeah, she definitely listens to that song, doesn't she?
Did you listen to that song to get in the mood?
No, we should have. No, there was a few songs we listened to get in the mood, and it definitely wasn't that. What would she do? She wouldn't go back to that apartment.
No. There's no furniture in it.
But there's nothing. They never used the furniture anyway.
I know.
We were covered in bruises.
I'm not surprised. And probably blisters.
There's no give
like
in that hardwood.
Like splinters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
That's what actually went through my head. I was like, wow, that is not comfortable.
Not great. Richard put it up as well on Twitter. He put a picture of us from behind the scenes of us just hanging out in our bathrobes, but covered in bruises, just hanging out.
Yeah. God, the makeup team had a big job.
Yeah. I would say to Anna, buy some arnica. Stay away from the flat. I don't know. Explore. Go. Leave London. Do something. Yeah, are you coming in?
Yeah, sorry, have I disturbed your interview?
Yeah, come on in. Do you want to share the seat? Here he is now.
Hi. You just told me to come in.
Come in. Come in, sit down. We're on a podcast. Do you know this?
You're on it right now.
You're on it right now. It's happening.
Are we reenacting scenes from Obsession?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that might be a bit too much for our audience. Bit PG.
I don't know, just put my hand. This is what you have to decide. Like, I'll just lean it like that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not supposed to be here, am I? You look nice.
You look nice.
Are you going somewhere?
Yeah, later. Are you coming with me? I hope so. We're going to the screening office.
I've just been hearing about your bruises.
Covered.
Where were yours? Knees?
My knees, my toes.
Elbows and hip bones.
Yeah, all the bones.
How does one get a bruise on a toe?
I'll leave that up to you.
Yeah, let's not go into that.
We're not going to reenact
it. Maybe this is the roller skate, when I roller skated over your toe. There were handprints left on the walls. I think they had to repaint between days because there were handprints left on the wall.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
We've kind of ruined your interview.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
I think this has really made it. Our chat was great.
Is it on film?
Yeah, it's on film too.
Oh
so we got
I was
the
doing everything with my hands.
I got told to come in the room.
Oh my God.
I thought you were coming in to stop me from speaking about something I shouldn't be speaking about. This is my interview.
Get out. Thanks. Nice to meet you.
Speaking of wrecking balls,
there we go.
Well,
I don't know what we got in the can in the end with filming Obsession with that current.
I've got, well, it's great on screen.
Great.
They've done a great edit job.
Good, thank God.
But we always end on this question on the podcast, that always is, in the reign of your life, what is the one rule you'll always live by?
Don't take yourself too seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Let it go.
You gotta get over yourself, as they say. Just get over yourself.
And if in doubt, get Cash in the Attic on and have a word with yourself. It's a very philosophical experience.
Absolutely. Barry's tea, Cash in the Attic. That's good.
Tick. Love it. Thank you so much. You're honestly amazing in this.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here for this episode of Rain. If there are things that resonate with you, I'd love to hear from you. Get me on socials at Josh Smith Host. And if you enjoyed this episode, please like, rate, subscribe, or follow, and share this with someone you think should hear it. Let's get those convos going, because that is what this podcast is all about. Hi babes, me again. Just wanted to tell you about something very exciting. I can't believe I'm about to tell you this, but I've written a book and it's called Great Chat. As you know, I love to chat, plot spoiler, and I love talking to people about their lives because, as I always say, talking and listening is so powerful. The book is all about how you can master conversation and transform your life, just like it has for me. I've used my experience from all the amazing interviews I've been lucky enough to do, as well as a load of research to help you deal with everything from making new friends to embracing difficult discussions. Great Chat should never be underestimated. It can truly improve your well-being, allow you to create the life you want, and bring in the connections you are so deserving of, babes. You can pre-order Great Chat today in hardback, ebook, and audiobook, read by me, no less, and it's out on the 20th of June.